Mass Chat Live, the first episode of this academic year. This one is a special episode on the Maths Conf 33 takeaways. Mass Chat Live is a live thing, so we are streaming on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook and LinkedIn. So wherever you tune in from, probably Twitter. Do reply, comment, retweet, and you can also, you know, help us drive the direction of the conversation. So it's a live interactive thing, responsive, as we like our teaching to be. So we'll just have a very quick round of introductions and get straight into talking about this wonderful conference that was on Saturday. So I'm Atul, I'm an online tutor. I'm based in London and I teach, pretty much everything from Key Stage 1 to A-level maths. That's me. Over to you, Matt.
Yep. Hi, everyone. I'm Matt. So I've been teaching for 10 years. I've been based at Bromsgrove, so North Bromsgrove High School. I've been teaching for 3 years, and I teach pretty much from year 9 to year 13. So it's a year 9 to 13 school, so Key, Stage 3, GCSE, and A-level maths and further maths.
Thanks. To you, Jane. Your first time. Welcome to Maths Chat Live.
Hi. Thank you very much. Hi, I'm Jane Webster. I teach maths along with some other things. I teach secondary up to A level, but I also spend a lot of time in primary schools as well. I am currently working with Enigma Maths Hub. I'm a senior lead at Enigma Maths Hub and also a teaching for mastery specialist.
Fantastic. And I'll just call you MathSpot for now and you can go ahead with your...
I'm Johnny. I'm not MathSpot today. Monday to Wednesday, I'm a normal teacher. Taught 4 lessons today and I've got 5 tomorrow, so I'm exhausted. So if you see my eyes, darling, it's because I'm planning my lessons on the other monitor. And then Thursday and Friday, you can call me MathSpot if you want, because that's what I'm doing currently.
Yeah. All right, brilliant. Okay, this is sort of, free for all, really open-ended. I thought we could just start off with sort of overall thoughts on the day, how you found it. I certainly come back after it absolutely buzzing, like full of like absolute enthusiasm. On the next day, the day after, and like the first week, I try to implement things.
Go on then. I'll take this first. Hold on. Jane, you're going to go?
Yeah, go on, I'm happy to. I always get so excited at MathConf, and yeah, for probably a long time afterwards as well. And just before we came on here, I was looking up what other people have been putting on there. Because the only annoying thing about MathConf is you can't get to see everything. But what I really liked about it was the connections between all the sessions. So I'd deliver my session, the first session on multiplicative reasoning, and then I went to another session on proportional reasoning, and the same messages and the same ways we were going about using ratio tables. I think that excites me, being surrounded by people who think in a similar way. And you just want to stay forever and just chat, chat to people. Johnny, I think I chase you out of the building saying,
you've been trying to talk to me all day, and like every time nearly had a conversation with you, someone else would barge in and take your place. Sorry about that. We'll have a proper conversation.
We'll have a chat.
Yeah, but you're absolutely spot on with that idea that, like, you go from one session to another and, like, they're kind of talking about the same things, which is cool, and it kind of strengthens your belief that what we're doing is hopefully right. Just thinking back a few years, I remember, like, when algebra tiles were first coming out, and you'd see like a big round of sessions on like complete the square with algebra tiles, and then two color counters would come out and you'd see sessions on zero pairs and stuff like that. And now the big thing, which I think is a great thing, is this idea of proportional reasoning and ratio tables are mentioned in pretty much every session and things like that. Wonder what the next big thing is. It's nice to see. It's really good.
Yeah, and what I loved as well was that, sorry, Matt, go on.
No, I was about to say, I think, you know, following on from ratio, I think, was it Bacon Kieran from AQA? I mean, he did like a journey of like tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 ratio, almost like sequencing, isn't it? Which is almost fascinating because it just makes me reflect on how should we teach ratio, or why are we doing the wrong way? And so it's a good reminder how it how it is that, you know, you're up to 25% of the whole GCSE course is basically tested on ratio and proportion, which is
it seems like more than 25% to me, to be honest.
Yeah, it is. I looked at all of last year's papers, and I think they included fractions in there as well, and it was roughly 33% on all tiers and on all boards.
Yeah.
I remember, because quite often we'll do like the first half of a GCSE paper with year 11s, and like, it's amazing how many topics you can apply a ratio table to. Some of them, like, you have to shoehorn it in a little bit, like if it's an adding fractions questions, but technically you can still kind of set it out in a ratio table form. Mm-hmm. And it is, it's impressive how many topics you can hit with it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so many, including trig. That was why convincing people, trying to convince people to move away from Sokotoa, has been painful. But I was tutoring a girl. I don't usually tutor, but I've got lots of friends who have children, so I end up tutoring quite a lot. And she was doing higher, and she just wasn't making any connection. She didn't really like maths. She wasn't that interested, and everything was a struggle trying to recall everything. And she had all these procedures in her head. I said, let's try this. Let me just show you these ratio tables, and you can use it for this. Oh, go on then. And I showed her, and I showed a trig using ratio tables. And she thought, okay, tried it. And then I went seeing her a couple of weeks after, and I gave her a trig question, and she started using the ratio tables, really did it really quickly. I was like, oh, I started smiling. And she looked at me, she said, what are you smiling at? I said, well, you just use the ratio table. And she went, yeah, because it's easier. Of course I'm going to use it. She went, I even told my teacher.
Yeah, it's such a, I mean, to go to your workshop, Janie, of our workshop number one, proportional reasoning, multiplicative reasoning is, I suppose, in some ways the essence of secondary maths up to GCSE, isn't it? It just comes up in different formats. Whereas in primary, you know, we're still working on additive reasoning, which includes subtraction, and it can be quite a big conceptual jump.
It is a huge conceptual leap, I think. And I think certainly in my school, we've focused this year on multiplicative reasoning. So we meet once a week. We've got a shared PPA that we all said, no, we're just going to meet up and we're going to talk about multiplicative reasoning. That's where we start. We start with the move from additive to multiplicative and how we do that. Because that's huge. If you don't get that right, then
get with this intervention work, get counting in ones, or, you know, skip counting and stuff, while it needs to be multiplicative. So so they haven't moved on from the idea of additive.
No, and the students that I find that are in kind of later year groups that are really struggling with percentages or with ratio, they are still working really additively. You can kind of see them. And there's often maybe students who get to year 9, maybe year 10, there's that resistance then to try anything new because they've done percentages this way or they've done ratio this way. So getting it in year 7, moving from additive to multiplicative and really having a focus on that has really helped.
Yeah. Thinking back a few years, like maybe like 10 years ago or something, when people were teaching ratio, and it used to be very common, just like that three-step sort of method of add the parts, divide by the total, multiply up. I've not seen that personally in classrooms for quite a while now, certainly where I teach. So I think there's definitely been a shift towards actually doing it, not properly, but like setting out in ratio tables, well, bar models initially to get the concept, and then moving towards ratio tables. I still find kids find that leap hard. Going from 3 to 9 multiplicatively is fine. Going from 4 to 16 is fine. But that leap from going from 9 to 12 multiplicatively, they still struggle. And quite often I find myself drawing basically what's a double number line. And then, so like the 1 times table, then the 3 times table underneath it or something, then just rubbing out the numbers we don't want, then just drawing his ratio table in with the 4 remaining numbers, kind of like what you need. Keep thinking, it'd be cool if there's a tool that kind of like expanded a double number line into a ratio table and
There you go. That's a Thursday, Friday test for you.
No, I wasn't saying I was going to do it. Someone can do it, I'm sure they can.
Go on, I'll give it a go then.
Yeah, you can do it in your Desmos, can't you? Certainly.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the other thing I forgot to say. I got a bit addicted to Desmos in over lockdown and created a few things. So that's going to be my next obsession, I think. Thanks, Johnny.
Look forward to it.
But I was just going to say that that's exactly how I do it. I start with... there's a really nice checkpoint activity from NCETM. If you've not used those, they're brilliant. And it's just a times table grid. And it's all about moving multiplicity from one row, one column to the other, and leads to a ratio table, and do exactly what you said. You just start hiding bits. I think I use your times table grid, actually.
Yeah. It blows kids' minds when they realise it's just one massive ratio table.
Yeah, and then you just cover bits up, and they kind of abstract the ratio table from the times table grid. And once they make that link, then it's really easy. Mm-hmm. I tried doing it once without doing just going in from a double number line to a ratio table with a year eight group. And they were quite vocal in when they didn't get stuff. What are you doing that for? And I realised it was that they just didn't get it, that it was linked to times tables in any way. Oh, and it just completely baffled them. So I went back and just took it slowly and spent loads and loads of time on the times table grid and how do you get from the four times table to the eight times table. Ooh, what about the two times table to the five times table? And then even took it back to kind of just using quiz and air rods. So going, how do you get from the two to the five? Oh, can we get to one first? Oh,
yeah, I remember that image you shared at the workshop, actually, yeah. It was getting from five to two, wasn't it? Like, you take five, divide it to five to get the unit, and then multiply up to get two. Yeah.
And then building that up so they can go from any number to any number until they go, oh, well, that's just easy. You divide by that times by that, and then, oh, you can multiply by that. And then once they've got the idea that they can get from any one number to another number, that's multiplicative reasoning, easy. Mm-hmm. Get them then from there to a ratio table, then they can do any question.
Yep. Then you hit them with the Don Stewart boxes resource. Cracked on. See you in an hour.
Picked up, cup of tea.
Pretty much, yeah.
But it was that was needed for them to have that breakthrough.
Yeah.
And it's quite often that I'm finding now I'm spending much more time in my lessons trying to figure out what the kids don't know.
Mm.
And spending much more time on those. My words have gone. It's been a long day. I forgot I can't speak in the evening. I can't even form a sentence. And I said, I'll come on this. That was ridiculous.
Most teachers are feeling like that on a
Monday. Yeah. Need a gin in hand.
Spending time on the really small stuff, just really kind of sweating the small stuff. Because it's that's been blocking them all along. And it's made me a much better teacher. And I spend a lot of time listening to the children and listening to what they're saying and listening to their methods, just so I can see where they're going wrong so I can put it right.
That's amazing. That ties up exactly with Mark's last workshop. I'm sure that was one of his tips, which is actually the listening and the measurement of where your pupils are at. That's such an important part of the skill set. And then changing it is very hard, yeah. And then changing your delivery based upon what you think the measurement is.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I was there. I was doing a workshop at that point.
Oh, was you on period five yourself, Matt?
Yeah, it's almost like, is that the graveyard slot or is it the slot where all the... I was talking to one of the LaSalle teams and like, what's going on with all these speakers, you know, during period five? Like, I'm guessing all of us just wants to go to Mark. almost for all the best speakers last, not that I'm being biased. It's like, oh yeah, that's to try and make sure people don't actually leave and take the train back home.
Yeah, it was very entertaining. And as always, he has his habit of posting a question and flooring almost everyone, because nearly everyone gets it wrong. And then they realise, oh, this is something very simple, I don't know.
Tip number one. Tip number one, though, is just yeah, it's always find it really interesting because some of my colleagues in my school are let's say they are really into mixed ability. And when I say into mixed ability, like they really try and convince us, we're the rebels in our school. We're like the ones that do setting or do it based on attainment scores, etc. And she was like banging on about mixed ability. She had her case. I mean, but you know, I always fight back and say to her, well, English, you only have one tier. Maths, you got two. So that's already, you know, an obstacle. And then, but, you know, even with, now I remember Mark saying it once before, you know, Mass Comm 33 saying, to be fair, any group that is more than one pupil in the group is already mixed ability in that sense anyway. So, you know, you either have a mixed ability, which is like that wide, or a mixed ability that is that wide, it's still going to mixed ability anyway. So it's just, you know, it's just the way groups have been formed. But, yeah, and I was just, it just, you know, whatever Mark says about something about mixed ability or whatever, it kind of reconfirms sort of my belief about what mixed ability actually is, or what, you know, maybe just send that block to her and see what she thinks. She'll probably just dismiss it. I don't know. how about you guys? I know, I was about to say, I don't know what other I don't know about how many schools do mixed ability of that form, you know, pure mixed ability. I probably know about one or two schools around the Midlands that do it, but
I've tried it. Yeah, in a few different places for various different reasons. And it just depends. I've seen it work really, really well in one school with one teacher, but in that same school, another teacher just didn't work at all. So if you've got the right teachers, the right resources, and everybody buys into it, it can be amazing. I loved it when I was at Milton Keynes Academy in Milton Keynes, and we did mixed ability with year seven, and it was just when I'd started looking at teaching for mastery, and just got involved with the math hubs. Mm-hmm. And actually I went over to Shanghai on the one of the exchange visits, and I just watched it work really, really well. But the way we taught really lent itself to that. But then there were some others in the department who kind of hadn't bought into it and just carried on teaching the way they normally would with quite tightly set groups.
Right.
And it just didn't work at all. And then students were left behind, or they just talk to the middle, or they just talk to the top, and
because I mean that's the thing that it's always kind of gets mind-boggling, because like, you know, in my school, you know, the SLT will mention about, you know, you've got to teach to the very top, you've got to teach, you know, you've got to stretch the higher pupils. And I'm like, well, how about those who are, say, you know, struggling a bit and need that scaffolding? And it's like, well, you know, so for example, like at the school I'm at, you know, English have pure mixed ability, and as maths has, you know, ours are setted. But I think for the second year in a row, our school has managed to, well, the maths department managed to outwin the English department by about 3 or 4% in terms of 9-4s and 9-5s. So I'm like, well, but she still says that, oh, you know, the English department is amazing, which it is. Now, I'm not saying English aren't good. They're really, really good. But it's like, well, if you're trying to justify an argument about pure mixed ability teaching, then surely English should be beating us maths by a whopping like 10% or something. But I guess it is back down to kind of, I guess, again, the right teachers with the right groups, you know, the right relationships with the students.
What I thought worked really, really well, having everybody in the same room, was it made those students that come in, I think I've got a little bit of a bee in my bonnet about it actually still, those students that come in who were kind of the best at maths or really good at maths at their primary school, and back in the day they were gifted and talented at maths.
Oh, yeah.
Those students who think they're really good at maths because they can do like 10 questions really quickly, and they were really, really good procedurally, and they could work their way through an algorithm really quickly. But actually they couldn't reason. They couldn't think. You give them a problem that was slightly different. They couldn't explain things in different ways. So when I was doing the mixed ability, I spent, and I still do actually, regardless of who I'm teaching, spend a long time trying to get them to think mathematically rather than just rattling off. Because I'd had one this year, there was a, we were doing percentages and I had a student and she was clearly loved maths because she was really good and really quick at it and was really good at it at primary. And I was trying to get them to do percentages using double number lines and then eventually onto ratio tables. And she was just doing it all kind of in her head, like finding 10%, 5%, 1%, and then adding it all up. And she carried on doing that, even something like 23.8%. And she had like a page full of work in where she'd found 10% and she'd found 3% and she'd found 0.8%. And I had a quick word with her and said, this is why we're doing this. It's for, to make you a bit more efficient. And discussed it all and she nodded her head, did a couple like that. And then I went and spoke to her. They had a test on it a week later. She did it all back the way she'd done it at primary school, the kind of long way around. I suppose there's change resistance there as well. That's another thing that I think about quite a lot. But she was some just get really stuck on the way of this is I was really successful at this at primary, and really resist anything different.
Yeah, I've got one who's in year 10 now. Anything to do with two fractions, butterfly method, whether it's adding, subtracting, dividing, whatever, straight into the butterfly, like no thinking. And, you know, I've spent time with him conceptually using the area model, Cuisenaire rods. So then I come back 7 days later and it's all gone, or it's quite a bit of it's gone. You get this forgetting curve effect as well. So you get this idea that, well, okay, conceptually they got it at the time, but because that procedure is so embedded, there's been so many repetitions of that procedure, since it's really hard to undo. Like, you need so much more of the new thing repeated on top of the old thing to kind of get rid of the old thing.
I talk to people a lot about that at the moment, particularly with the year sevens, getting them into new ways of thinking and new ways of working, and how you can convince a student that they need a different method or they need a different way and that theirs is inefficient. That's important, because if you're not kind of confronting that and talking about that, they're just going to stick with what they know.
I think you were saying something, Johnny. Your mic was, we couldn't hear you, so maybe it's disconnected or something. Yeah. Still can't hear you.
Still can't hear you.
Johnny, you've gone.
No.
Okay. Oh, well, Johnny will work. Work on a fix. It's connecting to audio.
Right. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
No idea. I've not pressed anything, so not sure what's going on there.
Oh.
Yeah. I wondered what was going on then. Anyway, yeah, I'm saying, going back to your butterfly method. Hopefully you can still hear me. Yeah, I say it's absolutely fine. Crack on. Use the butterfly method. Like, 301ths plus 7 404ths. Go and use the butterfly method. And they end up trying to do 101 times 404 when, like, obviously a more efficient method is just to, you know, get a common denominator, just multiply one of them by four and get a real easy one. So that's one of my sort of go-to techniques to show them why the method is rubbish by giving them a really hard example to use with it. And then hopefully that knocks some sense into them and you actually want to move to more efficient methods later down the line.
Yeah, break their method.
Yeah, well, yeah, not break it. I mean, it's still doable if you really want to do 101 times 404 and then simplify your answer at the end. It's doable, but like, yeah, give them a headache which can easily be solved by a better method.
Yeah.
That's what I suggest.
With algebraic fractions, it will cause problems with more than two of them, will, you know, the butterfly method.
Yeah.
but he's applying it to everything, like even with multiplying, it's quite, you know, or and dividing, because it's just so embedded. C2 fractions, attack it with butterfly.
It's that thing, they've got something that works, so they'll apply it to every word every time they say a fraction.
Yeah, it's give them, they get shown the method because it gets quick results with nice, simple fractions.
Yeah.
But whoever taught them that method is not forward thinking. Is this method going to last? Or is at some point they're going to, you know, fall down and make things a lot harder for them? Yeah, I'd much rather struggle in the early stages. It's like I was having a discussion with Kieran the other day about like when you introduce the column method for arithmetic. Like, as soon as you introduce that method, it's like a lot of kids will just go straight to that method, boom, 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 not look back, not try anything else, but they're not really ready for it. They're not really secure in what tens and units are. And once you give them that, they just start carrying ones left, right, and center, especially when it comes to the subtraction. Whichever's the biggest number, they'll do that subtraction.
Yeah.
And I worry that these formal methods are introduced too early before they've actually got the concept. If we call in butterfly a formal method, I'm not sure if that's I'm sure if you even qualify it as that. It's a method.
I find exactly the same, Johnny, with when they come in year 7, they're really good procedurally. They can add, subtract, multiply, but they've no idea that actually that's a place value table that's hidden in. When I talked about that mixed ability class I had in Milton Keynes, we went back and we got the Dean's blocks out, we had all sorts out, we had place value tables, counters, all sorts of things out, and I said, right, you've got to show me this in like 3 different ways. And it was then that they started going, oh, that's what's going on, that's why I do that. And once they got that and they could show me in 2 or 3 different ways, all right, then you can go back and you can use your column method, because then they got it. And it really helped those students kind of at the top end who would just rattle on with that. It really helped them to reason mathematically because they had that conceptual understanding. The ones who just at primary school just could copy it down and do it, then they had it. They're like, I get what's going on now. Right, now I'll use it because I get what's going on. And it just leveled the playing field with them all. But then we were able to go on. My favourite thing ever, my favourite maths moment ever, was having a year 7 class. It was a different class, but a year 7 mixed ability in there. And straight afterwards, I had year 13 maths. You know, the exploding dots, James Townsend's exploding dots. I was playing around with that at the time. And so I had this class of year 7s. They were looking at dividing. So they were dividing in base 10, just with the grouping of the counters. Then they were dividing in different bases. And I had one girl in the class, she'd moved on to base X and started looking at dividing with base X. So when they walked in, she was still finishing it because I'd like got her to do a little poster of what she'd done. And the year 13s came in, what's she doing, miss? I was like, she's doing polynomial division. And they were like, what? But we're doing that. And they just, because she was only a tiny little thing, and they just pounced on her, like, show us what you're doing. And so she did. She just sat there and talked them through polynomial division with some counters on a place value chart. And they were like, why do you not teach us like this? This is easy. But once they had that conceptual understanding of what's going on with place value, base X, off you go, I can divide.
Should have liked my session. I finished with a bit of place value chart and base X.
Yeah, I loved
the classic 108.9 task. Was you in my session?
I can't remember. Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, I did the 108.9 task for those people that weren't in it. And like at the end, we proved in base X, you always get the result 10, 2 less than the base, 1 less than the base. And yeah, we're just messing around with a place value chart and doing column addition and subtraction, but in base X. But it gets you thinking, doesn't it?
Why I was chasing you.
I
want to talk to you more about that because I've been doing since that moment a few years ago with that girl, and to now, I've been thinking along the same lines as you have, I think. So,
cool.
Beware, when I catch you, you're going to be sat down talking for a long time.
Right, okay. Maybe not tomorrow because I've got a busy day tomorrow, but yeah. Maybe Wednesday. Catch me on Wednesday.
Okay.
I'm hoping Charlotte does eventually run her place value presentation. What's the point?
Yeah, if she didn't break her arm, that'd be useful, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So that would be place value in more depth, and presumably more, the point is the sort of the base point or the radix point or the decimal point in base 10 and fractional place value. But I really look forward to it when that one happens.
Well, be good to change topic because it's like I always have about half an hour. What do we think about just have your opinions, because I was discussing with Tyab and a few others about the new level 2 extended qualification from Pearson. Had a look at it much in detail, or
I've not had a chance to have a look at it yet, so I'd be really interested to
have you, Johnny, or at all?
Me neither, I'm afraid, sorry.
Still slogging through.
I'm guessing are you sort of familiar with sort of the AQA level 2 for the maths qualification, or
yes, I get some duties doing that one. Yeah, yeah, it's a nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice
So what like Alex are doing? Because I went to the workshop. So it's like workshop number 2, and it was some very interesting discussions. I think there's about sort of 20 of us that were there, and it was Fiona who was sharing about this new qualification, which is sort of I suppose it's meant to compete against AQA, because it's gone almost kind of like a monopoly with AQA with level 2. I guess OCR with it's kind of, you know, they're at level 3 one, but that's a bit of a different kettle of fish. But it's like essentially with the LXL one, it's meant to be this sort of bridging between GCSE and A level. So it adds a little bit on to GCSE, but it's not like like with the AQA syllabus, you're adding in stuff like calculus, differentiation, and you're adding a bit of matrices, so you're adding a bit of A level and further maths into it. Whereas like the LXL one is more, in the words of some of the people, they were saying like, is it just basically like an extended, just top end 7 to 9 paper, plus a few little bits. So I think I've seen the draft papers and seen a bit of the SAMs, and they're including a bit of stuff on, like a little bit about the binomial expansion, but like using Pascal's triangle. I think in terms of transformation of graph state, adding in stretches, which was in, I believe that was in the previous GCC spec or something, and just slightly harder surds, slightly harder algebra fractions, slightly harder everything, and that's like...
What do you mean by slightly harder?
Yeah, so it's basically GCC, but slightly harder, that's kind of what it is. Some were sort of saying about like, oh, I don't really like the look of this, because does it really equip them for their A level? Because, well, we're not including calculus, we're not including, you know, matrices and stuff. But then I was sort of, I was speaking to Mel from Just Maths, because she also does a bit of advising for Pearson, and just had a conversation with her, just to sort of be convinced about the new qualification, just to sort of, you know, trying to see if there's any, you know, what are the benefits of choosing Pearson compared to choosing AQA. And, you know, Mel was saying pretty much like, well, with the EdXL one, you, in terms of teaching time, I guess for us, it's where teaching time is so precious. Because I think like with the AQA one, yes, it's great to stretch out the top end, but it only tests what they call AO1 and AO2, like the fluency and the reasoning, but not problem solving, which is, when I was looking back through the AQA ones, it's like, there isn't actually that much problem solving, whereas like the new EdXL one contains sort of the proper problem solving. So it's kind of like, you know, Hannah's sweets, but slightly harder kind of problem, or vectors, but slightly harder, or that kind of thing. I mean, is that a good thing for the students to be more exposed to sort of AO3 type in terms of extended, or should we go for more sort of calculus matrices as that kind of thing? What do we think about the two comparisons?
Mm. I mean, I haven't seen the spec, but yeah, depending on your sort of top end sets, I probably prefer the not the AQA one. I mean, I haven't seen the EdXL one. I sometimes feel like they've kind of half done calculus, but not properly. You have to do it like the proof and everything properly at A level. Yes, they've had a bit of an intro. It's quite procedural, even when they do it in that AQA level 2. And yeah, there's no problem solving, as you say. So it's, that's a big part of, I mean, I think I personally did the OCR one many years ago, the same qualification, and it was useful as a bridge to A-level. But yeah, as soon as you get into A-level, the A-level progress is so fast anyway, that any kind of benefit that you got from it isn't as big as you would think. So probably the Excel one would be quite good. Yeah, it depends on your student and your what they want to do. Yeah, but certainly it's a good option to have.
I'm definitely going to have a look into it, because I like the sound of getting into more depth of GCSE and more problem solving in there. Sounds probably more beneficial than actually learning the calculus, but not in any depth, actually.
Mm.
I quite often find, when I've done it before, you get your students who are doing, and you've got to try and either shoehorn it in to a half or a quarter of a class as you're teaching your GCSE,
yeah.
Or you did, what's happening more and more is they're doing a lesson after school.
Yeah.
So if it's more in line with what's going on at GCSE, maybe you can have it as that natural extension. Is just my first thoughts on it. And
yeah.
When you then get your A-level class, you might have some who've done the further maths and some who haven't. So you still got to teach it all again anyway. So from that point, that I didn't really see the benefit of them doing it, unless you had enough that were going to go on and do further maths.
Yeah.
I bow to all your superior knowledge, because I don't teach in a sixth form, which is something I kind of miss, but I don't. But like what you're saying, and like having to like teach the calculus very superficially, very quickly, that's basically what we just said earlier with like the butterfly method for fractions. What's the point of teaching something really quick if you know you're going to have to revisit it, or even do damage in the first place by doing it so quick?
Teaching butterfly calculus, I quite like
butterfly
that.
Butterfly calculus. Yeah, well, it's the same idea. It's just further down the curriculum, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Teach everything right the first time if you can.
It's calculus. Absolutely. Is also in the Edexcel International GCSE, which is obviously, it's done in international schools and some of the public schools. I find it completely pointless, the calculus they do there. I mean, they only do differentiation and just at best to like find maximum and minimums, and that's really, this is no point in it, because it's not calculus as far as they just taught the procedure.
Is that the A spec or the B spec, or
I think it's the A spec, it's the more common one, isn't it? Though,
yeah. Oh yeah, the A spec does contain that, which is, it's so weird. I always find it's just so weird how there's like A spec, B spec, further pure, because I looked at further pure. Because I was assuming when Edexcel were announcing this Edexcel thing, it was more like the further pure international GCSE. I'm getting very nerdy here, but it's almost like AS. It's almost like the AS paper. You look at the international further pure GCSE paper, it's very, very AS-y in that sense. I'm like, well, what's the point of doing that?
Yeah, it's a very big stretch. It's much more than, I feel it's more than the AQA one.
Yeah, like, what's the point of doing that? I mean, it's great. It's great to prep for the Year 12 students, like, you know, giving them a kind of a GCSE style one for the Year 12s. But is it good for the Year 11s to be exposed to that? And get, I guess, again, it goes back to context of the group and where do you want the group to be? Because, you know, international audience or particular country is completely different to, say, here in England, where we're more, not necessarily into procedural, but more into sort of, we want to go more into deeper understanding, as opposed to being shallow learning. Well, not being shallow, but being more deep in what we're doing.
Yeah, it feels to me just like kind of how it used to be, where it's just keep moving them on. Oh, look, they're doing year 8 stuff, they're doing year 9 stuff in year 2, or that's ridiculous, but just moving them on to the next thing without that depth of understanding. Well, we've moved so far away from that now.
Yeah, it does remind me of Jo Morgan's, was it MassCom 32? Was it 32? I think she did acceleration without depth or that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was really good. I found it really useful. I think you were there, Johnny, with that one, were you? Or?
I was on that one, yeah. I think I've seen quite a few of Jo's sessions are based around that kind of theme of like, you know what, you take a topic, like expanding out a single bracket or one law of indices. There's so much you can do with just that one topic. you don't have to smash through multiplication law, division law, and power law all in one lesson, and that's indices kind of done. You could spend a week if you want just on the multiplication law, because there's so much to do. And she always shares a load of resources to say actually how you can do that. Yeah, I quite like Joe's sessions. They're always really good, and you always have a ton of resources, so you don't have to find them yourself or make them yourself.
Yeah, I've just written that down. I'm going to look back about that. It's kind of working with the math hubs and looking at teacher mastery. It's always a huge thing where people say, but the curriculum says I've got to, my scheme of work says I've got to do this in 2 weeks. My heart sinks when I hear that, and I hear teachers just so stuck to a scheme of work that it stops them teaching the maths properly.
Mm-hmm. And getting teachers' mindsets into the thought of, like, okay, you've just taught, say, linear nth term, and you've got some early finishers. The natural extension is not quadratic nth term.
No.
There's a lot you could do with linear nth term, like tell them what the sum of the first five terms are and tell them what the third term is. Can you work backwards and all sorts of stuff? I know, like, I banged on about completion tables for the last year of my life. Completion tables are great for that. Like, depending which columns you give them, you can make linear nth term quite a challenging topic.
Is that a case of, like, I'm just trying to think of, say, typical teaching, you know, in terms of, I think that's all, you know, we go to mass comps and we get in this amazing quality CPD from, you know, teachers from all over, you know, there's no party line. But, like, those who might be more, say, perceptive to go to these events or something, or, you know, so it's, you know, as I said, more resistant to change, or those who are probably more like ECTs with less experience or something. It's always those, a few of those that kind of, I guess they struggle to think about, not struggling, but not necessarily use the time to think about how do we go into depth, or do we think about what topics are associated, like, for example, with linear M-term. So many things go with linear M-term, you know, you go so deep with that. I mean, you can go for weeks on end with it, you know, you can even talk about weeks and everything on that. Yeah.
It's easier for an experienced teacher who's been doing it for a long time, or somebody who's kind of had time to really look into it. I think I spend hours planning, hours now, just because I love it. I love learning more about maths. Enough about me being a geek and just spending all my time doing maths, but for an ECT, their first 2 years are just crammed full of stuff to do.
Yeah.
And within that stuff, none of it is about teaching maths. None of it is specialist knowledge for teaching maths. They need that. I remember I'm working with some ITT students this year. I worked with some last year as well. And I remember when I first started teaching maths quite a while ago, and I just taught it the way that I'd been taught it.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably did that for maybe 15 years and picked up a few things along the way. And then I had time just to stop and think. And when I started working with the math hubs as well, and just really thinking about what I was teaching, why I was teaching it, how I was teaching it, and thought, maybe I'm not this brilliant teacher that I thought I was, and just rethinking it all. And for those, it just feels like teachers, they don't have, if you're in the classroom, you don't have time to stop, think and reflect about what you're doing and why. And it's really, really important to do that. And I know from kind of working with math subs, trying to get a secondary teacher out of the classroom to do some CPD is an absolute nightmare. They just you've got a math teacher in front of some children, and you're a head teacher. You're not going to let them. You like tie them to the chair, and you're staying. But that CPD is still so important.
Backwards thinking, that though, isn't it? Like, you've got to get them better. Things like Twitter as well has been a massive influence on me, like, because you get to talk to all these brilliant maths teachers across the world, and like, as long as you've got like sort of like as long as you put yourself out there and put some resources like and you know it's not going to be perfect and you know people are going to critique it and the 99% of people on Twitter will critique it respectfully or say, do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? And I absolutely love all the suggestions I get for maths part or for my teaching as well. And I just wish, well, firstly, I wish Twitter wasn't like, seems to be going quieter and quieter nowadays, but I wish I wish everyone at least signed up and had a look as an ECT student. Like, you get so much from it. Like, it's how I learned about MathsConf all those years ago. And I went to my first MathsConf, God knows how many years ago, but it was the one in Leeds. I think it was MathsConf 8 or something like that. And never looked back since.
Yeah, it's how we met, because I wanted to test virtual algebra tiles. Because I was teaching online. I was like buying packs and sending them, posting them across the world. And then Mark said, there's this guy running maths.
Yeah, known you a while now, Arthur. Yeah. Wow. I'm just fly.
My name was on your workshop description, but at the time I was actually, and to bring it back to primary, it's really nice to see some primary teachers getting involved in MathsConf. It's so important as well. I mean, Kieran's got this lovely network of it. And I was at Joe Austin's one, which is like reception and key stage one. And the level of thought he's put into what he does, really all forward facing. I think his mother's a teacher as well, so he's probably like just gained quite a lot of knowledge from his mother as well. But you know, even a simple activity like throw all these deans, the tens and the ones together, and then organize them, and then unitize them and exchange. There's all these fundamental ideas that have to be done using, you know, whatever representation works, and then fade it out. But you know, it's really, really, really good to really well sought out. There weren't many people there because there wasn't a big primary turnout. But I learned loads.
Yeah, I wanted to get to that again. But I always say,
Yes, your session. Yeah, it's clashed with yours.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I was in yours. I always say to everybody now that I've learned more over the past few years from looking at what's going on in primary, and that's helped me be a much better secondary teacher. And what I've found is that the stuff that's going on in primary links more closely to A level. Than a lot of the things going on in secondary.
All right.
Yeah.
That's a big claim.
That's massive.
No, but you just talked about polynomial division and
polynomial division
and with long division.
It's
which
about the conceptual understanding. Because use that as an example then. If students have a good conceptual understanding of base 10 and what's going on with base 10, and they know it, they can use a place value table, they can use a Gategno chart, they can use Dean's blocks, and they can compare all those things, then it is not a huge leap then to go and look at that in base X. So they can see base X as an area, they can see it as a place value, as you were doing, Johnny. And it's just that link nicely in from number then to algebra, which a student can't do if they can just do a column method. That's not going to make sense.
Yeah, I think the area model is one of the most important things that kids learn, and it's ridiculous that it's not pushed in primary. And it's no fault of primary teachers. I'm pretty sure it's the government that wants them to do traditional long methods quickly. But like, it's ridiculous how much the area model, like every time I introduce completing the square, I'll go back to Dean's blocks first and show them. Every time I'm expanding an expression, I'll show them what it looks like in base 10 first. It's just crazy how many links you can draw.
I was shocked once quite recently and nearly fell off my chair. I was talking to some teachers about different methods for expanding brackets, because they all wanted to do FOIL.
FOIL, yeah, good old FOIL.
Yeah, they always do FOIL. And so I put all these methods on, and put all these, put an area model on, put an array on, I had it all. I got out all my representations and shared it all. I had one quite senior teacher say, I'll do the grid method, I like the grid method, but not the area model, I don't understand what's going on there. They didn't even see that they... That the grid is just a short version of the area, and I thought I had to go very, very quiet and walk out the room.
But of course, both of them are just ratio tables anyway.
Yeah, all goes back to a ratio table.
Yeah, like when you do the cross diagonals of the area model, just a ratio table. Yeah.
And in Mark's presentation, again, he showed the division symbol, the bus stop, you know, was a rectangle that's written different ways in different cultures, but it is the area model.
Yeah, it's the area model. Yeah. That blew my mind when I first saw that. Blew my mind. And so sometimes I'll show people it just so I can laugh and watch their minds going, oh. And to kids as well, when you show the kids it, they're like, oh, that's what it is. All right, that's easy then.
Maybe
that's what you said, Johnny, about this government thing about them getting to do procedures really quick. Yeah, it's they're missing out. I'm all for them doing it quick and all for them being fluent. But being fluent is different to being quick. They need to be quick and efficient and have a conceptual understanding. Without that, you can be as fast as you like at adding stuff up, but it's not going to take you any further in maths.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I'm getting quite deep tonight.
That's the idea. I think during lockdown, I was when we did Maths Chat Live started, and again, Mark was very, very instrumental in that. We were going up. We started one with a prompt, like, why do some children can't think of conceptually beyond 100%? And that led to like a three-hour discussion around the proportionality, fractions, and multiplicative reasoning. So, you know, these things are very complex, and it's taken humanity thousands of years to come up with the ideas, come up with the symbolic representation, come up with fluency. So it's bound to be,
And I think that's why I love MathsComp, because I get time just to sit and chat and think about maths and think about how other people are doing it.
And this is something for everyone there, because it's like everyone's on a different developmental stage of what they know and what they don't, you know. And it's good to see things like the old favorites, which we now think of as old favorites, like, you know, algebra tiles, for example. So there's, for someone else, it's brand new. For someone else, that division symbol meaning this is brand new.
I asked in my session how many people have seen 1089, and probably only half of them had seen it. So for the other half, it was something magical. And I said for the other half, just humor me for 5 minutes and enjoy it. But yeah. And don't forget, we're kind of like, I don't know how you find out about MathsConf. I get like, I'm guessing the vast majority of people that go to MathsConf are also on Twitter. I imagine there's a huge correlation there. And then you imagine what percentage of maths teachers are on Twitter? I don't know, 1%, 2%?
It's not very many. Small.
Yeah.
Very, very small.
Yeah, for me, it's like, how do we reach all those others who are not on Twitter and get like everybody hooked on CPD, because chances are we're kind of preaching to the converted a little bit. If we're already on Twitter, we're probably like sort of interested in this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Spreading the word, I don't know how we do that.
We tried sending out remember the old CGP way of getting people to open the envelopes by putting a curly wurly in it?
Yeah.
So we sent out some postcards to some schools and put curly wurlies in. They still didn't contact us. It's like, we have a curly whirly in.
Yeah, I bet they had the curly whirly there, didn't they?
Yeah, you're not getting our support then if you're not even going to respond to a curly whirly. Maybe it should be on the teacher standards that you have to be on Twitter. Every ECT has to be on Twitter.
You have to stamp a certain amount of CPD hours. If you're like in the States, you have CPD works a bit more like that. I think you have to like literally get it checked off. You have to do accredited CPD hours, and you get to choose your courses, I think, or something like that. Someone might be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but it's totally different in the UK. You can go 15 years without going on a single course in the UK.
Yeah, that's a shame.
All you ever attend is after school CPD from school, then you get a different reality to what CPD might maybe like if you're at get a mass comms, for example. Yeah. Got a mass orange.
We tried that school that was in, hey, it was Wilkins Academy again. We tried doing kind of a CPD program where they had a certain amount of hours. Mm. And I thought it was great. It was brilliant. We've got this time to dedicate to professional development, but it was a big backlash against it because people didn't want to do extra work. We just don't link between CPD and our own professional development.
And the irony of it all is that it's not extra work. Yeah, it is extra work in the initial, but like the amount of CPD and the amount of like knowledge I gain from mass comms now enables me to think so much quicker and deeper and plan lessons so much faster that it saves you work.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's like, yeah, you have to invest the time in yourself, but you're such a much better maths teacher at the end of it that things are just easier and faster because you're a better maths teacher.
Yeah.
But I think I'm trying to think of what it says on there, something about being, keeping up to date with latest developments in maths or something like that.
Yeah. Topical.
Yeah. Maybe it should be get yourself on Twitter, engage with what's going on out there now in maths, rather than relying on how you were taught.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're coming on to the last few minutes. Maybe to start rounding things off.
I've got five lessons to plan out. Come on.
Five lessons to plan. Okay. So you were multitasking.
It won't take me very long because I've been to so many maths concerts.
There you go. Easy.
Yeah. And so it was a farewell from Mark McCourt and quite a few of the LaSalle team. I was just very happy to see.
We won't see Mark again at all. No. Says it's his last one, but I reckon we'll see him again.
Yeah.
I don't have any insider information now, so I don't know, but like, I can't remember. Right.
Well, he's definitely coming to Match Chat Live because he's agreed to another episode, yeah, which will happen. So we haven't seen the last of him yet. Mm-hmm. But I was just glad to see that it's, you know, LaSalle are continuing on and they're doing it in whatever shape or form it takes. But it was just good to see the continuity and be there actually. Yeah, and I definitely benefited so much from it and can't imagine life without it. So it's such a big part of my life. Yeah, professionally, personally, all the friends. Network
that's
we made.
We all met here through MassConf. Mm-hmm. It's helped me to switch a job. That's through MassConf. So thanks, Mel, for that.
Yeah. It's just there's something just really special about spending the time with what LaSalle have done is through by organizing it on a Saturday and the way they organize it, they attract the people that are really really into it. They take the time off their teaching. Off the personal time and come on a Saturday. So really time is the biggest resource and you take that off and come along on a Saturday. And
yeah, you never get someone at a maths conf that doesn't want to be there. That's what makes it special compared to maybe some other CPD. Like it's midweek and the kind of school shipped you off there. But because it's on a Saturday and people are giving up their time, it's just full of positive people. You never get a negative person at all. I know Mark joked, didn't he, about like hecklers and stuff, but like I've never seen that at a maths conf. I'm sure it's happened once or twice in a couple of sessions, but 99% supportive and having a great time.
Yeah. Kirsty really co-presented with me and she'd never been to a maths conference before, and I was like, come and co-present with me, it'll be, you'll love it, honestly, get to maths conference and you'll love it. She loved it. She got forced in really by me, but just the whole day, we've not stopped messaging each other about it. The highlight was meeting you, Johnny. Thanks,
Sophie. She was really good for a first time ever as well.
First time.
Next time we'll be doing a solo session, I imagine.
Yeah, I'll tell her.
You two are going to be like a little double team.
We'll just go be a double act now, I think.
I think Kirsty went to my workshop as well. I think did she go? She went to my one, didn't she?
Yeah.
So it's so nice to see, like, because obviously I've been to MasterCon for years, decades now, and like, and then to see people like starting their career, and then a couple of years later, oh, I'm thinking about doing a session, and then they do the first session and they're terrified, and then 5 years later, they've done 10 sessions or something, and like, they're just like part of the circuit now. It's so nice to see people just like develop like that. It's good.
I must have done about 10 now. Now I think almost 10. I reckon if I'm not 10.
When you've lost count, that's when you know you're like, you've done.
Yeah, I was trying to do that list of like, these are the mass comps I've delivered. And like, wait, I can't even now, I can't do a 10 now. That would be too long. It'd be too much on one slide.
See, I came late to MasterConf. I've presented at 2, and I've been to another couple as well.
I've seen both of them, I think, Jane. It was in Gloucester, wasn't it, the first one?
It was in Gloucester, yeah. Yeah, because, yeah, I saw Mr. Matsbot watching me, and I was terrified. Yeah, it was...
Oh, God, that's ridiculous.
But it was great, but it just... It feels like you're just with friends, just because everybody thinks like you. It's amazing. Well,
basically, you are with friends after a while. As soon as you've seen them for a couple of times, like, some of my best friends now are people that I've met through MasterCon.
Yeah, MasterBot cooks a very fine pizza, I can tell you that.
Yeah, you've had a few pizzas of mine now, I tell you.
Even in the way. Yeah, no, it's been amazing, actually. Just to, it's basically a new social network. It's because when you're teaching maths, and, a lot of people can think, oh, maths, but people who live and breathe maths teaching and totally, totally get your passion. It's something just about just being in that company. And you said, Johnny, there's no one who does not want to be there. Everyone wants to be there.
It's a special feeling. It's a special place. And yeah, you come home from it, and my wife anyway is like, oh, she's back. Exciting, was it? And I'm buzzing. Just so excited about, and I'm like, who else can I share it with? Nobody. I can be that excited about maths. It's like you're given permission to be excited about maths. It's great.
Yeah. That's why we did this, I think. I felt we still needed to get that so far.
Just to get that fire ignited, that buzz started. Yeah. Chances are that you'll not be able to stop them. Yeah. I wonder how many, obviously there's no stats. I wonder how many people have said, right, I'm going to go to a mass conf, and they thought, ah, no, that were rubbish. I'm not going to another one. But it's got to be a small percentage. It's got to be.
Yeah. I can't imagine anybody doing that.
Yeah. Once you're hooked, you're hooked.
Yeah, bet the sound of complete mass must have some data on, like, people that have only ever been to one mass conf. That'd be an interesting stat for them to dig out someday. Yeah. So what's wrong with you?
Not for first timers, obviously. They only gone once.
It was nice to see all the hands go up for the first timers on Saturday. It was probably
There's quite a lot of first timers.
Splits like that. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, that's the great thing about it, because it changes location, so it allows people who look. My first one was MathsCon 10, and it was just it happened to be in London, so I was like, someone told me on Twitter there was a buzz going. I didn't even know I could go as a tutor. I just kind of just went and, been hooked ever since.
And then you will travel really quick just to get there. You'll get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning to get to Leeds for...
I'm not going to blackmail again, though. That was ridiculous. That took like 5.5 hours to get there.
Brilliant. Well, we can wrap it up there. Thanks again for your time, and... I hope to see you again as your first one, Johnny and Jane, and Matt, obviously, you've been on a few times, but I look forward to having you again. And if you're watching out there and you want to come on our Mass Chat Live, you're very, very welcome. It's a very no party line. It's a very relaxed kind of chat about Matt. People who live and breathe and love the company of others who do the same. Great. So I'm going to end the stream there, and we'll...